Welcome to Growing Places, a podcast about all things economic development right here in the Sioux Metro. Growing Places is brought to you by the Sioux Metro Growth Alliance and our supporters. Welcome back to Growing Places, your regional roundup sharing the stories of economic development in the Sioux Metro. I'm Miranda Basie. Today we have economic development specialist Ryan Solberg with us. Ryan, good morning.
Good to be here, Miranda. Glad to pinch hit again.
Hey, that's not very nice.
Back in the majors, right? Jesse has a pulled hamstring. Sheldon has Tommy John surgery. So I'm getting called up.
You're getting called up. I like that. I like that. Well, we have two guests in the studio today, and this is an episode that lots of people in our office are really excited about when they saw the calendar and who is coming in today. So I don't know that there's a whole lot of introduction needed on my part, but today we are talking with the South Dakota Secretary of Labor and Regulation, Marsha Holtman. Good morning.
Good morning. So excited to be here and have this opportunity to share some exciting information.
Well, we feel really fortunate that you and your team took time out of your schedules. You guys have a lot going on. You've made some big announcements recently. So we just feel really fortunate, and we're going to soak up every second of time that we have with you and your team today. And we also have Tara Bartakowski. I think I said that right. I got a thumbs up. The apprenticeship program manager on the podcast today too. Hello.
Hello. Excited to be here. This is really one of the dreams I've had to be able to share and have an opportunity like this with Secretary Holtman. So I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, you guys are welcome back anytime. We could just turn this podcast into your guys' show. I think we could work that out.
Hey, we have plenty of content. We'd be more than happy to do that. And for what you ask for.
And noted. We love to talk too. So it could fill up time.
Awesome. Well, I think maybe let's just dive right in. And before we talk about maybe the big exciting thing, the apprenticeship program, could you give us just maybe some high level context? We have a wide variety of listeners, of members, supporter of the Sioux Metro Growth Alliance. Could you just give us some context of your department and what the goals, what maybe the day-to-day work is like?
Happy to do that. So again, this is Marsha, and just sharing very broadly, workforce related. So we are the Department of Labor and Regulation, but I'm going to focus on the labor side today. And regulation could be a whole nother conversation for a different day. But on the workforce side, we're really interested in making sure every South Dakotan can be successful in the workplace, providing them with opportunities to have the training they need to achieve that, and helping businesses fill their job openings. So to that point, just some information. I think everybody knows. I bet you guys have seen signs around town, help wanted, every place you go.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. I noticed signs, cooks wanted, to welders wanted, just on our drive here this morning in windows of businesses. And that's true across the state, and it's true in communities large and small. So we try to provide services that help meet that need. The reason that's true, we have a 1.9% unemployment rate now. Which is, I've never even heard of it before. It is the lowest in the history of the state. And this is my little soapbox. So a lot of people
I love it.
Don't understand what that unemployment rate actually measures. So you would assume that it measures people that don't have a job. That would seem logical. Mm-hmm. But this is a federal standard, so things are not always logical.
I love that. Your words, not ours.
So what it actually measures is somebody that's actively seeking work in the last 4 weeks. Okay. So if you've not been looking for a job in the last 4 weeks, you don't count. So it doesn't capture everyone that's without a job. So I think that's a really important public message to get out there so people understand.
No retirees, no folks who have dropped out of the workforce to take care of family or children.
Exactly right.
Yep.
Or disengaged, or maybe I stayed home and raised my children for X amount of time, and now I'm wanting to get back into the workforce. Mm-hmm. So there are more people available to work than that number might indicate. But our number of unemployed has decreased by 2,000 in the last couple of months. So we're down to only 9,000 people that meet that definition.
Wow.
Wow. At the same time that we have over 25,000 open jobs in our database.
That's a large, there's a big difference there.
Yep, there's a big gap. And so I share that not to be depressing, but to make sure that employers know that it is a real challenge. And that's why we have to be really creative and why we have to look to populations that maybe haven't been in the workforce And how do we re-engage them? How do we provide meaningful training to them so they can be productive and successful and provide for themselves and their families?
One of the things that's going through my mind as we, you know, hear that, Ryan, is the communities that you're representing, the work that you're doing to try to bring businesses and growth and development to those communities. Workforce is something that is brought up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impacting decisions that communities are making, but also businesses are making. What maybe stands out to you in Secretary Holtman's, you know, explanation that you think businesses or community leaders maybe need to dive into a little bit more, reconsider as they're making decisions?
Right. I think going back to the number you gave, the 9,000 folks who are considered unemployed, 25,000 job openings. I remember I spoke to a Lenox High School class 2 years ago. So this would have been 2021 data. And I shared similar numbers. And, you know, a lot of the kids, I said, what do you think the unemployment rate is in South Dakota? And they're all throwing out like 10%, 20%, mm-hmm. right? No one wants to work anymore. And then it turns out that there's a really a small pool of people who are actively searching for a job. And so I think, you know, every business that I talk to, workforce is probably their number one concern about doing business in South Dakota. Where am I going to find my workforce so I can be at my most productive? And I think from an economic development standpoint, from an employer standpoint, there's been a bit of a pivot to focus more on placemaking, amenities, and other factors that make attracting workforce possible. So things like making sure you have an abundance of housing that's affordable for people at their starting wages. Making sure that you have an attractive community, right? You have a nice, well-kept downtown. You have retail. You have dining. You know, if you're an employer, what benefits and wages are you offering? Are you offering other perks? So I think those considerations are something that economic developers and communities are considering more. And also when we deal with businesses who are thinking of locating in South Dakota, you know, we often thought that the first question would be, you know, what can I get in terms of incentives or an infrastructure concern, like getting enough water or sewer. But really, the number one question is always workforce and what's the labor shed look like? And can I find people in these specific positions? So I think it's really changed workforce. You know, I think a lot of companies have always said our people are our number one resource. And I think that's truer now more than ever.
Mm, I love that. And clearly, the state of South Dakota knows this because we're talking about something like the apprenticeship program. Mm-hmm. But there has to be trends and needs and things that you're analyzing to be able to roll something like this out. So could you talk about, and I'm not sure, maybe Tara, if you're the best person to dive into this, being that you're overseeing and managing mm-hmm. that program, could you talk about what led to rolling this out and structuring it the way that it is?
Yeah, do you want me to take that? So with the registered apprenticeship is really, you know, it's called like the little black dress of training. It never really goes out of style. It's been around for centuries and it's a really effective tool to train people. And when it comes to some of these things that have led to what we're doing now is really to help meet that need that businesses have, that they need some training when we have people that aren't engaged in the workforce and they have current employees who might need to be higher skilled. And that's a great opportunity to incorporate a registered apprenticeship to train some of those employees who are already working and they're in entry level positions. Let's get them some higher skills so they can move into those middle level positions. And then it opens up opportunities for more of those entry level positions to be filled. So really the strategy for registered apprenticeship has always been for DLR when it started was to help engage the workforce and help businesses understand the value of apprenticeship. And really our focus in the beginning was, you know, businesses, and we have to be able to build it. If you build it, they will come, right? We had lots of interest from job seekers in apprenticeship, and I want to be trained on the job. But we really needed those businesses to be part of that movement and to help develop some of these programs and some of these trainings for their business. And that's been our focus for many years. And now, you know, this model that we're talking about today and what we're really excited to share about is really the shift in what we're doing with registered apprenticeship and how we're able to support businesses into a higher level. Right now with Department of Labor, we have developed what we're calling like a navigator model. So helping businesses from day one when they're talking about what their needs are. You know, we have a team of people that will work with businesses and talk with them about their vision, their goals. Where do they want to see their company go? How do they want to grow it? And we can help them from that vision to incorporating apprenticeship within their company to help meet those needs that they have. And maybe it's they're thinking of one occupation or they really need somebody skilled in this area, but they haven't thought about other positions that are hard to fill. Or maybe they have somebody retiring that's been there for 35 years and they're going to lose all of that knowledge that they just have in their head. So those are things that we can really help businesses understand and help get them to the point where they can see their own vision, and we can help get them to that point, and then we can help them develop those apprenticeship programs. But now what we've come to is an opportunity to be able to help support at a higher level than we've ever been able to support before through financial incentives and financial support for businesses to develop programs. But also we're taking it to another level of being able to support those apprentices and those job seekers throughout their apprenticeship program to help them get from start to through their program so they can finish. Because a lot of times what we know about apprenticeships is that they are a proven model. There's lots of research around registered apprenticeships and how they work well. And it leads to higher retention rates and it leads to higher productivity. And what we know is if we can get apprentices through those programs and we can get them to stay engaged longer, that those retention rates are going to be a lot higher. So if we can support those apprentices and those businesses early on in the training, when sometimes wages are lower at, when the start of an apprenticeship, then we're going to have higher success rates for those businesses too.
And I just want to comment that everything we do with our training programs, we focus on the data as a starting point. So we actually have within labor, the Labor Market Information Center too.
And they great resource.
Yeah.
I use it quite often. Right.
Oh my God. And they're so accommodating. Like to hear that. That team is, you ask them anything and they're so responsive. So I have to brag about them a little bit. So we start with that data and it doesn't show us anything shocking like healthcare is high demand, manufacturing is high demand, things that make sense in South Dakota with our economy. But with this new funding that we have that the governor has provided, that state funding, we can kind of respond to those one-offs too. So what is high demand for one business might not necessarily mm-hmm. show up on that chart. So we have that flexibility to accommodate both. For instance, one of my favorite, and this really illustrates the beauty of an apprenticeship, it might be a small community. We talk about this one all the time, but mm-hmm. in Lemon, South Dakota, there was a butcher shop that needed a butcher, and it's an apprenticeable occupation. And so what this arrangement allowed, it allows an individual to stay in the community where their family is. They're not uprooting their family, going someplace else for training, leaving the community, and maybe never coming back. But they're staying home and earning and learning at the same time, which is such mm-hmm. a win for our communities, mm-hmm. As well as for those businesses. So, you know, thinking about the communities that you serve and in your area, it doesn't have to be a big business. It can be a small mom and pop shop, or it can be a large manufacturer. But talk to Tara and her team and they can help you figure out what might work for your business.
I love that example. And one of the phrases that you said is apprenticeable position. Could you dive into that a little bit more? What does that look like? Because I'm going through the Rolodex in my mind of these communities that mm-hmm. we're working with, these businesses that we're working with, and they, you know, run the gamut. So how does a business know what an apprenticeable occupation is?
First of all, they just need to contact us.
Yeah.
And never assume that something isn't.
Right.
So I'll touch on just a few of the ones that you might not ever consider, mm-hmm. and then Tara can go into
perfect
the more broad explanation. But we have in healthcare, so working on actually a nurse apprenticeship, we are super excited about a teacher apprenticeship that's just about to get launched, which is going to be huge because we all know about the teacher shortage. Mm-hmm.
My husband's a teacher, so I just want mm-hmm. to just applaud and
so cool.
Yes,
that's really
that
cool.
apprenticeship. Ooh. Mm-hmm. So excited.
But we also have organic farming mm-hmm. apprenticeships. We have a glass blowing apprenticeship.
Ooh, that's old school.
Yeah.
Like that's what I imagine in like 1820 like when you're put like, out as an
apprentice.
Yeah,
and you need somebody to teach you how to do that. That's a beautiful apprenticeship.
So just think really broadly and don't assume the answer is going to be no.
And that's exactly right. And, you know, right now there's like a list of 1,400 apprenticeable occupations. But that list is growing every day.
Wow.
So we always like to tell businesses that there's not really a wrong door when it comes to the occupations that they're looking at, because there's a process, and there's a process for adding new occupations to that list. And what's really great is we've had a couple, I think, and don't ask me which ones they are because I won't remember, but that we've been able to register nationally in South Dakota. Like, we've been able to create a new occupation.
Wow.
Out of South Dakota, but then the whole country benefits. So
amazing.
there's and it's awesome, because really what apprenticeships are is they're nationally vetted. So they have a team of people who are in that industry. They're experts, and they make sure that the program is really what they're learning, what they need to do to be proficient in that occupation. And those can be added to. There's a whole process for it. So right now we have lots of non-traditional occupations, some traditional ones, but they can be added to all the time. And that's what's the beauty of apprenticeships, is that there's not really a wrong door. And we always tell businesses that almost every position could be an apprenticeable one.
So I'm over here thinking there are so many pros to this. There are so many excitable things, and it seems easy. Seems really easy. So what does it look like to engage in those conversations? Are there any sort of benchmarks or thresholds that a business has to be able to meet in order to be eligible for getting an apprentice program mm-hmm. going? Or are there any kind of barriers to engaging in this seemingly Cinderella story?
Well, mm-hmm. I want to take that seemingly Cinderella story and then let yes. It goes into the details. We have learned over the last few years with the department, we've received federal funding, and it is a complex process. And employers, if you're a small employer, you don't have the resources mm-hmm. to dedicate the time to figuring out how to navigate the process, how to write the standards, what somebody needs to learn. So that's why we have Tara and her team now. And literally, if you're going to start an apprenticeship in South Dakota, you're going to have one person assigned to help you navigate that process that
Amen.
Works for the Department of Labor.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to know them by name. We just had, about 16 different employers in Pierre that were one of our first yes. cohorts. And they knew their labor person on a first mm-hmm. name basis because they work that closely. So our mm-hmm. goal is to take the headache and complexity out of it for the employers.
Mm-hmm.
And have our staff be that intermediary and help them navigate.
Yep. And it's been successful. We've had businesses who started the process with us years ago, and they kind of had to do it on their own. They had to do a lot of the work mm-hmm. themselves, because we only had, you know, a couple of people to run a grant, which takes a lot of time. But now us having specific people to learn the process, to figure out how to build those programs with businesses and really engage those businesses. I think that's probably the biggest piece of engagement, is having somebody there as their single point of contact to help navigate through that process has really been helpful with that engagement piece. When it comes to some of those like benchmarks and things that they have to do, really it's a federally registered program. There are some requirements when it comes to what an apprenticeship has to be. So there's like 5 components. So businesses have to be involved. The apprentices are paid employees, so they're an employee of that company. So they have to be able to hire them. There's not like a contracted, mm-hmm. like 1099, it's a W-2 employee. Then they have to have some educational components to it. They have to have some sort of, it's called related instruction. So it's education that directly relates to the job that they're doing and the work that they're doing on site at that business. So they're getting that hands-on training too, with the support of a mentor or an expert or somebody that knows that trade or those tasks that they're doing and can help walk them through that. Not only like teach them, it's a little bit more than training,
mm-hmm.
But it's how do you do it and why do we do it? And why do we do it this way? Because this is better for productive outcomes when it comes to what we're doing. So that on-the-job training, the related instructions there, and then progressive wage increases are built in. That's one of the required components for an apprenticeship. They just have to have at least one wage increase throughout, and that's built in because really it makes sense, because if you're progressing through a training program and you're learning skills and you're being more proficient, you should get rewarded for that. And that's really a benefit too for the apprentice and the company, because it's written down in black and white. If you do this, this, and this, that's when you can get a pay raise. And that's been beneficial that businesses have told us for them as well as the apprentices. And then it also leads to a national credential. So those 5 components are really the big pieces of it. And if a sponsor or employer can meet those, we help put them together into those documents and standards. And then we also help provide ongoing technical assistance and support once their program's built. Because the most of the work happens up front when we're building the program and when businesses are putting all the effort up front. But then after it's built, we're still there to offer assistance and to help maybe with recruitment efforts with our local job centers, things like that. So we're able to help and assist from step one to making sure the program's successful.
I think that that is so profound when I think about the just the spectrum of businesses, communities, and leadership styles that we as an organization serve as well. I think that, you know, we're the heartland, we're Midwesterners, we've got that work ethic, and also we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and we figure it out ourselves. And there's, I mean, there's a lot of a pride in that. You know, there's lots of smiles in the room as I'm explaining that. But what I love so much is this program, as you've described it, Tara, is intentional in supporting a business leader, not necessarily taking something from them or telling them what to do, but allowing them to cast their vision, solve their problems without headaches. Mm-hmm. And I think that translates to empowering our Midwestern work ethic to translate to leadership. That's kind of the feeling that I'm getting as we're talking about this apprenticeship is leadership and mentorship and making it easy for the people that are really great at what they do in our state and make our state what it is to pay that forward.
Agreed.
You're exactly right. We've heard from businesses that have taken on this model and they say it actually changes the culture of the workplace because people are taking on that mentoring role, that teaching role, the learning role. And so it's been a really joyful, unexpected positive side effect, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And we recently just had a business who developed a program and they said the exact same thing that Marcia just said, that they had probably a team of 10, but they had two apprentices go through the program. And they said immediately when they incorporated the apprenticeship that the culture shifted in a positive way for not just for the apprentices or even for their trainers, but everybody became part of that learning environment. And it became a supportive, how do we help support those apprentices and the company? And everybody was more invested. And they said that was probably their biggest benefit. Wasn't necessarily the skills that they were learning, but the culture shift that they experienced. And I think that's really valuable for businesses as well. And I had another thought, too, as you were talking. Really, when we talk to businesses, a lot of times they already have a training program already in place. They're already doing something to train people on the job. And really what this is doing is just formalizing it. It kind of takes what they're already doing and it kind of creates this formalized training program. So there is a little bit of work behind it, but they're already doing the work. And what the registered apprenticeship does nationally is it validates what they're already doing and it creates a credentialed program out of it, which is super beneficial and make, like you said, I like that you said it's easy because a lot of people don't see it as easy, but that's really our goal and vision for this program is to help it make it easy for businesses because they should be able to have those skilled employees and be able to do this in an easy way.
And we have some funding opportunities tied to the state dollars that we received. We're adding staff, so we have capacity. We obviously don't have somebody in every community, but the team is, they'll go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
well, you came to Sioux Falls today. So
right. We did. We traveled from Pierre and from Yankton. So we're willing to travel. But that's important in a state like ours, too, that we want to make sure that we are covering the entire state, that we're not just focusing maybe where the larger population centers are, because this model really is a good model for our smaller communities too.
And I really love what Marcia said about our smaller communities and some of those smaller businesses, because really this is a true like growing your own model. And really, it's not the only solution or only opportunity, but it offers a really great solution and another option for people to get. It, you know, it's considered a post-secondary. It might not be college or technical school, but it offers another opportunity for people to be able to participate in training, getting while working, supporting their families, maybe in their own communities. So it just is a really it just is, it's nice to be able to have a second option. I know previously before this position, I worked with the school districts as a career advisor for Department of Labor. And I know that was lots of conversations that students are starting to have is what options do I have after high school? What does this next generation look like? What opportunities can I participate in now to get some of those training? And registered apprenticeship offers a really great option for that too.
So as we think about the wide variety of roles, of businesses, of communities that this fits into, Ryan, our communities are looking to solve workforce problems every day with every project mm-hmm. that are either, you know, expansion projects for the community or bringing a new business in. How do we incorporate this into the growth and development of those communities? How can economic development professionals like Ryan be supportive and empower this and maybe advise businesses or communities on how to best leverage this program?
And I think if you can help us engage us, have us be part of those mm-hmm, conversations,
for sure.
Invite us to the table. We've been super excited to talk about apprenticeships today, but we have other programs that for economic development, and it's become a blurred line. I used to think there was this clear line between economic development and workforce development, and there's not. We are 100% in it together, and we have to be in it together because you can't do one without the other. So we have Career Launch, which is engaging with high school students. I heard you mention, you know, maybe talking to the mm-hmm. kids at the high school. Another thing I believe so firmly, we don't do a good enough job in South Dakota of letting kids know about the opportunities right here in the state. You know, we're kind of that Midwest modest, or we don't like to brag, but we need to brag. We need to sing the praises of our local businesses loudly. Yes. Kids need to know what opportunities are available right at home or two communities away if they don't want to live next door to mom. That was always my dream, and neither one of my kids fulfilled that for me.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. We'll send them the link to this.
Shots fired on the podcast. Man.
Children. Yeah. But we need to do a really good job of letting kids know about opportunities and then options for training that can mm-hmm. Allow them so many different things. And apprenticeships are not a competition with higher education
right. Because
they do have that related instructions component. Oftentimes that might be provided by a technical
right. School
or by a college or university. So it's, again, a partnership, yep. Which is how we have to approach all these workforce issues. This summer, we have Summer Pathways going on, which is a fabulous program to engage kids in their local communities and to know what the businesses are and to experience them through tours and presentations. And just, you know, we want to make sure every citizen doesn't leave because they don't think they can do what they want here.
Mm-hmm.
That's an uninformed decision.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's powerful. And we could just sit in that, I think, for a long time and chew on that. Ryan, I'm interested in kind of your thoughts, perspective as you're working in these communities of what they're doing, maybe outside of this, to develop their workforce or to try to address, you know, some of these challenges. I know that you're having lots of conversations with lots of communities about various challenges, but in relation to workforce, what else are you seeing that maybe comes together as a strategy?
Yeah, I think a lot of particularly the larger employers have their own training programs or they do something on the job. Usually that's sort of an internal certification. So I can see where being part of a registered apprentice program might have more utility because you're not just certified for one company. You can hopefully do processes at other companies. So that's something that I see a lot of our employers doing. I think there are a lot of our larger employers that are doing a much better job or they're being much more conscious of how they present themselves to the community or how they market themselves to the community, right? They're not just the large industrial building on the edge of town. They want to invite people to come in and tour the facility. You know, see what manufacturing or whatever the industry is, how it's changed probably since, you know, what you probably think of as a factory in the 1930s or 50s mm-hmm. or whenever.
Yeah.
So a lot of folks, I think, are a lot of our companies are doing a great job of that. And where I think I see this program not just complimenting our large businesses, but complimenting a lot of our small businesses. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the lemon example with the butcher shop, and a lot of our communities, they might have, you know, like a auto body repair, tax preparation mm-hmm. is one. These small, usually kind of solo operations, it's one person. They don't have a succession plan
right.
typically in place unless, you know, there's a child who's also wanted to go into the industry. This seems like a good way to kind of introduce someone into the industry and then hopefully get them into business ownership. Yep. It seems like it could be an easier way for these folks to start thinking about what their legacy will be in the community after they've left their position.
Ryan, you said succession planning, and I saw Marcia's eyes just light up. Tell us about that. That seems to strike a chord, some relevant conversation there.
Well, it's so important. And I think about those businesses that have been in our communities, and they have that legacy, and they have supported our communities, and if they could continue. And again, it's the beauty of allowing somebody from within that community that's been invested maybe in a different way to get a training at home. That, you know, it's hard to pick up a family and kids that are embedded in a school district. And maybe one of the family, the adults, has a solid job. And so they just can't pick up and relocate. To do that training, to become whatever the occupation is, like you said, in the tax business or at the body shop, and be able to do that and earn money mm-hmm. while you're doing it is huge. And so I see that as a really viable way for businesses to succeed into the future and be passed down to the next generation.
Switching gears a little bit, one of the things that we started talking about before we got into discussing the apprenticeship program are some labor market trends. And you talked a little bit about, you know, South Dakota's numbers, but I think a lot of us are wondering, how does South Dakota measure up to the rest of the country? Or are there other states that maybe compare to us? What are we, you know, what are we doing well? What are we not doing well? One of the things that I like to I want to be intentional in how I phrase this, because I don't want anybody to think that they don't work hard, but man, South Dakotans work hard. So yeah. is there anything on our productivity that we see? So just kind of looking at how do South Dakota workers and the state that we're in measure up to the rest of the country's labor, work issues, struggles, challenges, whatever word you want to use there.
Certainly. And that South Dakota work ethic or the Midwest work ethic is not a myth that we've created to make ourselves feel good about ourselves. It's a very real thing. And you talk to employers from other states that have been able to secure a South Dakotan in their workforce, and they love them. But there's some data that supports that as well. We have one of the highest numbers of multiple job holders in the country. And some may say that that's driven by wages, and that's kind of a conversation that's just really come to the forefront. Our wages are improving rapidly in South Dakota. I personally think part of it has been driven by wages historically, but it's also because we see work in our communities that need to be done, so we step up and we do the work. Mm-hmm. And that just results in more people having that second job. We have a tendency to work longer. You know, one of my favorite stories, there's a nursing home in one of our small communities, and the cook at the nursing home is 80 years old.
Wow.
And I'm always like, well, just cut your commute and move in.
I was not expecting that angle. That makes sense.
But she does it because there's the need in her community, and she's able, and she gets positives in return for doing it as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, it probably is extending her life to be productive and contributing mm-hmm. to her community. So we really do have that work ethic, and our productivity numbers reflect that as well. So I think we are unique in South Dakota. You know, we're seeing a lot of that in migration. That's one of the hardest numbers to really tackle, but I've seen, you know, the number that Sioux Falls has grown by 7,000. Mm-hmm. It's just really difficult because it's happening as we mm-hmm. speak, mm-hmm. but in communities across the state. The other thing tied to that, now I totally lost my train of thought, besides growing.
Just measuring our maybe workforce situation.
Oh, I was thinking comparing to other states.
Yeah.
So the workforce challenges we're seeing are not unique to South Dakota, but I think it's compounded a little bit in South Dakota. But on the flip side, the positives are our population is growing. Mm-hmm. I indicated that that unemployed number has gone down. Well, that's because our workforce number has gone up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we do have more individuals in the workforce than we had previously. So that's obviously a positive as well. So I think the best challenge in the world to have is to have more job openings than you have people, but we have to be really creative. I kind of like to say we have to leave no stone unturned. So anywhere we can look in South Dakota and find people that are not engaged in the workforce, you know, what strategies, what programs, if they so desire to be employed, how can we help them achieve that goal?
I'm really grateful for this conversation in this podcast because I'm thinking, Ryan, you can keep this in your back pocket as you're having conversations in prospecting and relocation for businesses. Mm-hmm. That despite our unemployment percentage, there are a lot of unique, interesting, and really valuable aspects to South Dakota workforce. Mm-hmm. And I would love to talk about that a little bit in terms of people coming, businesses coming to invest in South Dakota because of our work ethic. And Ryan, my hunch is you're having some of those conversations in some of the work that you're doing. Could you maybe share what you're hearing or what you're experiencing from companies, investors that are looking at South Dakota?
Yeah, I think, Secretary Holtman kind of got it right on the nose. We're not the only ones facing this problem. I think what's fortunate for us in the Sioux Metro is that we are part of the largest labor shed in the state of South Dakota. So I think that eases concerns that businesses have about locating in any of our communities or just locating in the region. Hopefully you can shake some trees and people will come work for you. I think the conversation always becomes, you know, like, well, am I going to be able to find the workers that I need? And, you know, look at some of the competitors that are coming into the Sioux Falls region. You have Amazon and FedEx and you have, you know, other big projects that are planned. And, you know, the response that we usually give is, you know, if you hop across the border into Minnesota, Iowa, or Nebraska, it's not getting any better. Mm-hmm. Wherever you go, you're going to be facing the same problem. So you might as well come to South Dakota where we have the work ethic. We have a better tax climate, regulatory climate. So I think it's not as much of a weakness, but it's something that we need to continue to address.
And I think another real strength in South Dakota is access to policy and decision makers. In a lot of other states, you would never get the opportunity to talk to somebody face to face. And we try to do that at my level, part of our recruitment efforts. So if somebody's trying to move to South Dakota and they're looking for a job, we'll connect them with a real life person. Mm-hmm. That's going to help them in mm-hmm. that job search. And you're not going to see that either. So still believe in that personal contact and that those one-on-one interactions mm-hmm. to the extent that we can.
I think that that is so valuable for this age of technology and, you know, so many things are at your fingertips. Nothing replaces human connection, mm-hmm. right? And so I would love to hear a little bit more about what can economic development professionals like Ryan be incorporating in their conversations about why the South Dakota business climate, the South Dakota workforce is something worth investing, you know, outside of the apprenticeship program and these other resources. You talked a little bit, but how can we strengthen that? Because we're biased, but we're really proud of South Dakota and we want our people to stay here and we want that to be noticed, that this is an investable state.
And I think you nailed it. It's the pride and that we do want people to come here and be successful. So we're not just saying that as economic developers. I mean, speaking on your behalf.
No, I think that's true. It's much easier when I've spoken with prospects or been on these prospect meetings and they're thinking of going to, say, like Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, South Dakota. Like, we can get you a meeting with, like, the Secretary of Labor, or we can get you a meeting mm-hmm. with someone from GOED, and it's not going to be a whole lot of fuss to have someone who can answer your questions if we can't. We're so much more accessible, and I think ease of doing business isn't just the regulatory environment. It's also your day-to-day interactions.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we're all about connections. I think that's one of the benefits of being a South Dakotan that we haven't talked about is that we love to connect and my team gave me grief when we walked in because I know three people in this building.
I didn't know you know Angie.
This just means we got a good group here.
Angie said you make really good baked goods.
Oh, yeah. She's phenomenal.
Okay. Yeah. Now we're getting off topic. Sorry.
That's my favorite thing is to get off topic. So, but I think those connections are so important too. And I think as economic developers, remember to utilize those connections. And that we don't just want them for ourselves, but we want those businesses coming in to build those connections as well. And that's what's going to make them successful. That's going to be what makes them want to stay in a community and be based in a community to, you know, get them engaged, get them involved in the community. So when we talk recruitment efforts, and we have partnership out-of-state recruitment efforts right now with the Department of Tourism and GOED, but the communities play, at the end of the day, they're the key. We can maybe hook them, get their attention, but then we need the communities to be the ones, whether it's a business or an individual. We have to sell them at that level.
So as we start to wrap up the conversation, before I get to meet one of our favorites, our ultimate question, do you have any other advice, resources? We'll certainly drop some links, some contact information in the show notes, but what would be, you know, your last bit of advice for business leaders, community leaders, economic development professionals to best solve our workforce challenges?
I don't know if I have like a huge solution, but one
silver bullet.
But one thing we didn't like talk a lot about, but when Secretary Holtman is talking about connections, I think one really important thing that businesses can look at or think about or consider, especially when it comes to recruitment, is like, what does their like mentoring look like within their organizations? And, you know, mentoring is a part of registered apprenticeship, which also makes it really valuable. And there's lots of benefits to that. But also, like, businesses can do that on their own without even having a registered apprenticeship, too. And, you know, we've had lots of conversations with businesses and organizations on, like, what does that look like? Can we start a mentoring program within our company, which also then helps to increase those recruitment and retention efforts, because people have higher job satisfaction when they have somebody that really is there to support them, especially when we talk about young people. I think there was a study out there that said 65% of millennials valued workplace mentoring. And
you got to have a workplace mom or dad or a workplace sibling, workplace friends.
Yes.
Even in like when I was in my high school jobs, like I had a workplace dad, you know, someone you've turned to.
And a lot of times with
shout out to Don, if he's listening.
Shout out to Don, my mentor. Yeah. But a lot of times with mentoring, sometimes that happens organically where, you know, somebody takes somebody under their wing. But really, when you look at like a structured workplace mentoring program, you know, that can be something where, you know, everybody can be a part of, or everybody can have an opportunity to be a part of it. And it really can help increase that engagement and recruitment of some of that, the new generation. So I always like to put a plug in for workplace mentoring. And we do have, you know, we can maybe share a link for that too. We have that as an online resource. We have a free, no cost resource for businesses if they're looking to develop one, has like tools and resources for them and a training as well. So I always think that's a really great strategy for businesses when they're looking at how do we change and impact our culture as a business and as a company.
I like to say that retention is your best recruitment.
Right.
For sure.
Yep.
And just real quick, a couple hints for businesses when I get the opportunity. So look at your hiring process, like literally go through it yourself or have one of your kids or the neighbor or people at different ages. Because a lot of times your hiring process is eliminating people before they even get through your application. Can you shorten your hiring process? We have attention spans of gnats. If it's taking 6 weeks to hire somebody, you're going to lose them to five other places before you get them hired.
I think Amazon is like next day job offer at their new facility, which is crazy.
It's crazy, but that's what you're competing with. And then you have to look at your culture. And your culture doesn't have to be that you're fun, but it might be that you're fun. It might be that you give back to the community or do public service or... And if you look at your culture and it's bad, I mean, that's the most obvious place to start. But I think businesses have to take a hard look at themselves, too, because everybody knows or they think is factual. But your business can get a bad reputation undeservedly. So you have to make sure that you're really focused on your culture and making the best it can be.
Yes, I like that. Speaking of fun things. We ask all of our guests this, and I know that this is a question that you guys probably had to research and prep the most for.
This is the hardest question, nervous for, baby.
Hardest question all day. We always ask our guests, what is your favorite hidden gem out in the Sioux Metro. So we like to just shed light on maybe some of those local places. Could be a restaurant, could be a bar, a coffee shop, a park, maybe just something off the beaten path that more people should maybe drive just an extra 3, 5, 10 minutes to go see or make a stop to.
Well, mine is, I really enjoy it's called Redesign in Beersford. It's a little thrift and antique shop, and they do like furniture that they redo, and they have lots of really, it's really cute. Every time I go, I have a cousin that lives there, and every time I go visit or I'm in the area, I try to go stop by just to see what's new there. It's like one of my favorite places to stop when I'm there.
Cool. I have not yet been there, and my husband might not like that. So I'm going to put that in my back pocket.
Add that to it. It's a good one.
I'm very excited to go make that stop. Secretary?
Well, we alluded to the fact that I love to bake, and I have a little home bakery business. So I always consider it market research.
Yes.
In Centerville.
Ooh, yeah.
The Royal Bakery and the Zebra Donuts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I it's a great excuse. I can never drive by a bakery and not stop.
I love
absolutely.
That. We've had Jared Hybertson on the podcast a couple of times, and he's
great.
Yet to bring me a donut. So, Jared, if you're listening, I am bitter about that. So,
another shots fired moment on this podcast. This has just become an airing of grievances here.
And my mailing donut address is.
We'll put that in the notes. Yeah. But awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk about South Dakota work and remind us that it's not a myth, that we do have some data to support our pride in our work, but then also to give our businesses and our community leaders some tools and resources. And again, we'll have those notes in the show notes, and we'll get some contact information there so that our listeners can peruse that information and get connected and hopefully get an apprentice program going if they don't already have one.
Yes, that we would love that, and we would love to help any way we can.
I love that. Well, thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Growing Places. We hope you tune in again next time for another story about the people, places, and businesses that make the Sioux Metro the place to call home. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Growing Places. Visit us online at SiouxMetro.com and follow us on social media at Sioux Metro. And always leave things better than the way you found them.